Shocking news, Mr. Shannon, as we commence for this hump day. After about 55 consecutive losses, the Buffalo Sabres have finally figured out maybe the coach is the problem. And as such, have tied a can to him. Hard to say it's the wrong move, isn't it?
Oh, listen, there's so much wrong in Buffalo, as our buddy Mike Harrington told us last Friday. This is just one of the symptoms, and I'm using the play on word on symptoms because this is a team that was strifed with COVID earlier in the season, but there's so much wrong in Buffalo. And Ralf Krueger being fired after being, what, winless in, is it 13 games? And to lose to, if they were going to beat a team, they were going to beat New Jersey. And they couldn't even beat New Jersey on Tuesday night. So from that perspective, it was something had to happen. And so Krueger paid the price. He's still a rich guy, going to get paid next year. Something had to happen in Buffalo.
But that doesn't seem to be the end of the story for the Buffalo Sabres. With the trade deadline now, I guess it's looming. We're getting April a lot 12th. More talk. Yeah, I know, but it's not exactly, you know, next week, you know, but a lot more talk about the possibility of teams making moves, and especially given the fact that if a U.S.-based team trades with a Canadian team, your player's going to sit for 2 weeks, and you want him to play as much as possible. So you want to make moves as quickly as you can, especially if you're going across the border, right?
If you're a Canadian team, for sure, yeah. You know, so you have to wonder if the vultures are circling around Kevin Adams in Buffalo. But I'll tell you what, Bob, and maybe this is just me. If I'm the owners of the Buffalo Sabres, I'm not letting anybody do anything drastic in Buffalo right now. I'm not letting Kevin Adams touch the roster. I am limping my way through the end of this regular season. And then, unfortunately for Sabre fans, doing another reset in order to try to fix this thing. They need so many things to happen in Buffalo in order to try to fix this. They need to figure out how to reorganize their hockey operations department. They do have some really good parts. You know, Jack Eichel, who's not playing right now because he's hurt, is a great player. Rasmus Dahlin, a first-round pick, has had a horrendous season, but there's some talent there. There are some talented players on this roster, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't let anybody who's in the front office right now touch this roster because they could do even more damage than's happened so far.
Well, that's an interesting analysis, and I don't necessarily disagree with it in principle, but Taylor Hall. Here's a guy who is making a lot of money, who has barely performed, barely showed statistical impact, indicated that he wouldn't mind staying in Buffalo, but maybe he's thinking, I wouldn't mind staying in Buffalo because they'll probably pay me where nobody else will. I mean, does he have any market value?
I think that's a great question. He's, without being overly critical of Taylor Hall, losing seems to follow this guy around.
You're not wrong. I mean, statistically, when accurate.
When you think that the year he won the Most Valuable Player Award was the only year he made the playoffs in the National Hockey League in New Jersey, he took a one-year deal in Buffalo as an audition, not just for the Sabres, but for the rest of the National Hockey League.
Right.
And he hasn't performed well. But again, no one has. You know, Eichel's been hurt all year. That's why finally, after another little injury, they decided to rest him. This is just an abomination. And it's really a shame, Bob, because you know Buffalo as a sports town. They love the Sabres. And these people are abusing one of the great fan bases in the National Hockey League. And at a certain point, you have to wonder, will the fans finally walk away and say, I've had enough? I don't think it'll happen. But, you know, the ownership, the Pegula family, have to find a way to decide what they want to do with this franchise. You know what they did and what they did with the Bills. This is the same group that owns the Bills. What they did with the Bills is they signed a head coach, they signed a general manager, and then they leave them to run it, and they don't interfere. And my fear is that they've interfered a bit too much on the Saber side.
Well, the big advantage you could argue with the Sabres is with COVID, you know, the prospect of not selling tickets is irrelevant because you haven't been able to sell them anyway. So, but having said that, Buffalo Sabres fans are diehard enough. They watch games.
Sure.
And
it's still one of the number one or number two TV markets for regional broadcasts in the United States.
That's right.
You know, it's still a hardcore hockey town. This is one of those ones. I guarantee you there are 10 very solid hockey people salivating at the opportunity to run the Buffalo Sabres and turn them around. I really do.
I don't disagree.
As a guy who has been around the game for a long time, to see a city and a franchise be frustrated as much as the Sabres have frustrated their fans, to me is mind blowing, Bob.
Well, we'll keep our eyes on them, of course, in spite of the fact that you'll have to look a long way down.
By the way, you know who they need? You know who they need somebody like?
Like our
they
guest.
Need somebody like Lou Lamoriello. They need somebody like Lou Lamoriello to walk in and say, hey, I'm running this team.
This is how you do it.
Yeah. And let's get going. That's what they need.
And from the perspective of this is how you do it, he is doing it again with the New York Islanders. And Lou Lamoriello will be our guest when we continue after this. We're thrilled to have one of our favorite people with us. He is the head honcho of the New York Islanders. And Lou Lamoriello joins us from Long Island, I assume, Mr. Lamoriello. Yes?
Yes, Bob. That's where I'm at right now.
Pretty good run your team was on. I think you hadn't lost a game in regular time for 12 games. I think 9 in a row, and then knocked off by Washington last night. All in all, got to be pretty happy with the way your team's playing.
No, I'm extremely pleased. As you know, you're as good as your last performance, and as you said, last night didn't go so well, but it was a game that could have gone either way. We took a couple of penalties that we shouldn't have, and they took advantage of it, and they're a good hockey team. You know, the parity in our league, as both you and John know, is real. And you have to be ready each and every night. And there's such a fine line between what can turn a game and in either direction.
And particularly in your division, where you guys got dealt a pretty tough blow. Not only did you have your regular competitors, but they go and add the Boston Bruins to your to your division. It's not easy to get out of the East, is it?
No, but it's a great division. I was excited when I heard that the Boston was coming in. I think of the proximity, certainly, of Long Island and certainly the history of Boston. But I think we've got a great division. John, this reminds me of the old Patrick division, if you remember when you
sure.
know that, what that was like. And you play each other 8 times, and every game that you know, the players are ready for. You know, you get to dislike your opponents. With the regular season, I've got to be careful I say this, the commissioner will give me a call, but during the season schedule that we have, you know, you sometimes can go a couple months without playing, you know, someone in your own division.
Yeah, if memory serves me, you were always a huge advocate for regional rivalries. You always believed that that was going to be the key to the success of the National Hockey League. Can you see, even though we're going to probably go back to the old divisions, can you see playing a few more games in your own division?
I would like to see that. I think that when we went to really spreading the scheduling out, a lot had to do with the different locations and expansion teams wanting to see players like Mario Lemieux and, you know, Crosby and, you know, Gretzky at that time and now Connor McDavid. But I think the number of young players that we have coming in and having immediate success and being at that level, I think that they're as regionalized and important to see them each and every day. So I would certainly be a proponent. As you know, I always believed when I was in New Jersey, I would love to play the Rangers 8 times because of the rivalry and the competition and the fans. I think it's just great for the game, but I do understand the other side of it, and television sort of dictates and demands certain aspects of scheduling. So, but my opinion is still the same.
Well, you two guys may disagree with me, but I have a theory on all this. I mean, for a long time, we've heard this, I think it's gobbledygook, about you don't want to keep the stars of the game away from the fans in the other markets, you know, whether it's Crosby, Ovechkin, whoever it is, who is the star of the moment, that the fans in other markets want to see those guys. And I would say to you, most people, especially not even just in America, that I don't even want to say that, almost anywhere, are fans of their hometown team or fans of a particular team. And yes, they're aware of the other stars, and they, and it's nice to see them now and again, but they're buying tickets and turning on the television because of what, in your case, Lou, the New York Islanders do, and who the opposition is from a ticket buying perspective, from an interest perspective, only marginally impactful. So if I'm one of the guys who's a fan of the Islanders, like you, I want to see you play the Rangers 8 times, like you when you were in New Jersey. I want to see you play your regional rivals as many times as possible. And if I can't see, some star from the West Coast for 1 time a year, the trade-off of that is well worth it. Do you subscribe to that theory by any chance?
Well, it sort of, says the same and endorses what I'm saying, that I would love to see that.
Yeah.
But I do understand, and I did see some of the differentials in gates, Bob, that when a player went into a certain location team, that the gates were much better when a team came in who had a Mario Lemieux or a Wayne Gretzky than another team from, say, another region. That is because remember, we're talking, right across North America we're playing right now. It's not just in regions. We have a team in every location. Tremendous kudos to our commissioner, Gary Bettman, for what he did to expand the game. And now we have players coming into the NHL from those areas, California, Florida, mm-hmm. that are playing on NHL rosters because of the NHL team and what it did for youth hockey and spreading the sport. So I understand that. And what I'm saying is today, I think we have more of these stars. And I would think that the focus is, as you said, is more so on the home team. That's what you want. But mm-hmm. that will always be the way if that home team is winning. It's when the home team is not winning that this helps.
Okay, I'll give you that. Just a sec, John. I'll give you that. But the hidden truth is, to get a guy like McDavid in the Canadian West to come in once a year, yeah, you might get a perk up in tickets. You're going to get a perk up when you also have Vancouver, Calgary, Winnipeg, whatever, other teams. Because remember, you're going to play games against everybody in that division. In order to do that, to get that one game against the star who may sell tickets, you're going to have other games against teams that, quite frankly, don't have the ability to have that impact. So I'm not sure how the economics really work out in favor of it. Thoughts?
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to put my league hat on here. Because once a team gets eliminated, and this has been the history of the National Hockey League, and this is one of the big problems in the National Hockey League. Once a team gets eliminated, there's a real philosophy and belief that franchise thinks the season's over. And hockey fans think that they're in the offseason. What the league needs to be able to do, and Lou and I have had this discussion when I was at the league, what the league needs to be able to do is to continue to tell those people in those markets that there's still hockey to be played. We still have 2, 3, 4 rounds of the playoffs. And you need to be able to reinforce that sure, Connor McDavid is a great player at Edmonton, but Vancouver's in the second round of the playoffs, and those games are still valuable for Islander fans or Ranger fans or Sabre fans to watch, even if their team is eliminated. And that's the great strength of our game is our regional basis. Like, we are so strong regionally. The NBA is jealous, and Lou won't ever say this, but I can. The NBA is jealous of how strong our regional bases are, how adamant our fans are. But we don't have the national following that the NBA does, because we have focused so much on a regional basis. And there has to be a fine line. There has to be a compromise that allows for both to say, okay, listen, Islander fans are great. Islander fans are great. But you know what? Islander fans, with all due respect, Lou, in this hypothetical, the Islanders are eliminated in the third round, but we want you to watch the Stanley Cup final. And those Islander fans don't watch the Stanley Cup final.
Well, but that's, Lou, I don't want to leave you out of this because you're our guest. But
well, I want Lou to figure this one out.
Well, you know, you want to react to what, you didn't want to react to what I said. Do you want to react to what John said?
Well, you know, reacting to both of you, but John, I understand what you're saying, but what we want to do is create hockey fans. We want to create the enthusiasm and the competition, and that's what I think we do with the regional situation, because they're following and who you're playing. But I understand both sides of it. From the seat I sit, I endorse the rivalry and the divisional play, because the players get up for it. The games are, in my opinion, better. It's just like the minor league teams that play against the minor league teams of the parent clubs. I think they create something. There's an animosity, a positive animosity of competitiveness, so that each and every night you get players playing at their highest level. Look at, you know, just take the Canadian division right now. You know, watching Ottawa in Montreal, or going back to what established Hartford when they got in the playoffs and years ago, and they played against Boston. You know, there's just something special that's created. So I'm for that, but I understand the other side of it, you know, from the business side and the NHL side of it. So all I'm doing is giving an opinion, and then I'm a soldier and just focusing on what we're told we have to do.
You see, this is what I love about Lou, Bob. This is what I mean, I don't think there's ever been a diplomat. And yet. I don't think there's been a more influential person in the game for a long period of time than Lou Lamoriello.
Well, and I mean, and this
the
is
subtlety why, of it, the well, subtlety of it.
You know, we bang ourselves over the head trying to get an opinion out of them because it's opinions that matter.
Sure. Now,
Lou Lamoriello, for goodness sake, would you keep the divisions where they are? Would you keep the game the way it is if you had the choice going into next year? Would you leave the divisions where they are? Would you at least limit, I think you already have said you would limit the amount of interdivision or interconference play, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would. I would keep the divisions the way they are if I had my way. But that's a personal opinion because of the competitiveness and looking at the pure game itself. And I'm not going to asterisk this and change my opinion, but I do understand what it means to spreading the game, promoting the game, and allowing the game to grow by having, you know, other teams coming in from outside your division. So I understand the merit, but from the pure hockey, I love the competitiveness that's created. It's no different than when you're in the playoffs. There's nothing better.
Exactly.
Than that team, you know, seven times, you know, if that comes about. There's just something special about it. I love that. The playoffs is what it's all about.
Well, and you've got one division with seven teams in it. That's the Canadian division, but you've got a new team coming into Seattle. Wouldn't be beyond possibility you could put Seattle in the Canadian division. I don't think that they wouldn't be that offended by that. Do you think, guys?
Well, let's put it this way, Bob. We can do and speak and have all the rhetoric we want. It's not.
Yeah, we got no power.
It's not going to happen. I think
that you're right.
The decision was for this year was fantastic. And excitement that's created. And I think that it will help different teams too in those different divisions as far as getting the competitiveness in it. Listen, we're in a dogfight. We're going to be in one, throughout the rest of the year with the teams we're playing against. But it's like every night is almost a playoff game. It's a four-point game. Every night is a four-point game.
Yeah. Well.
So you announced this morning that Anders Lee's out with an ACL injury, out for the season, surgery coming. What does that do to your team?
Well, you know, you never replace an Anders Lee, who is a tremendous leader, both on and off the ice, who's our leading scorer, plays the game the way it's supposed to be played. One of the best net front presence in a power play in the National Hockey League for the last several years. So we're not going to replace him, but I like the group that we have. They're going to respond without question. Coaching staff is, in my opinion, the best in the National Hockey League. So we just have to do the things that we have to do. Injuries are part of the game. A couple of young players have been given an opportunity because of it, and they have responded to this point. We hope they continue to do that. And if there's an opportunity to acquire a player and help our team get better, we'll do that. We do have now cap space that we did not have. But in saying that, you can't just go and make a transaction for today. You've got to think of tomorrow, because the cap's not going to change a year from now. So there's a lot of extenuating circumstances involved in any decision that's going to come. But it's no different than any other year. If you can get better, you're going to get better. He's a loss. There's no question. We're not sidestepping it, but that's part of the game, and we just have to respond.
So you talked about the flat cap. Does that mean if you're talking about acquiring, you're into the rental business?
Well, yes, or when you get into that end of it, or it's a transaction that's a little more major where there are, things go back and forth as far as players or picks or whatever it might be. But in saying that, this is no different than the mode you're in every year. So on this lease situation, just put your focus a little different than it was before.
Would you say that there's been a lot of talk about this, Lou, doing deals in this COVID environment, given the restrictions of cross-border trades, for example, where a player going to Canada would have to be off the roster for 14 days. Have you noticed that things are different, that it is more challenging in making a trade, or is it premature to suggest that?
No, I think it will be without question. All of that will have to be taken into place. And I'm sure depending upon the transaction that you might be able to make, whatever it might be, you'll actually look at the schedule that you have and see, what games you have in that period of time and how much of an effect, because, the trade deadline, depending upon when you make the transaction, if it's up to the last minute, you're talking 2 weeks after that. So you're talking May 1st. So you've got to be very careful of exactly what you do and how you do it. But there's no question the COVID restrictions play a role, and everybody's situation will be different. Certainly ours and the States are different. We saw a transaction come about between Nashville and Boston a week ago where the player drove, I believe, 20 hours to get to the city. And so these type of things potentially can happen. So I think they all will depend upon the set of circumstances.
I would suggest that April the 12th really isn't near as important as it used to be, because most teams are probably in trade mode now because of the shortened season. I mean, you talk about the dogfight that you're in your division. I mean, Philadelphia is a really good team right now outside. Pittsburgh is on a bit of a tear until last night. If you're gonna try to stay in the playoff race or try to win your division, You might have to make a trade sooner than later, right?
Depending upon if you can. I mean, but you always try earlier to do something. You I don't think anybody has an intention of waiting the last minute because, you know, you have what we call buyers and sellers. We have supply and we have demand, the old economic, process. And people wait who are looking to move people to see the best transaction they can get. And on the other side, you certainly don't want to give the star away. So, you know, that's why it gets to the last minute sometimes.
Lou Lamoriello is with us from the New York Islanders. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this. With the Islanders, Lou Lamoriello. One of the things that I was thinking about and that I don't know about you is over all these years as being a general manager, we know that some general managers like to travel, like to go to other cities, like to look at players, like to do a lot of the scouting themselves. They want to see things firsthand. Am I wrong in saying you aren't really one of those guys?
I was one of those guys in my earlier years. Certainly, I was out every single night. But I think that as the seasons went on and you established a staff that you felt was competent and that you could rely on, you did it, you spot checked and you did things on a quiet basis and went into a city to see a player that you wanted to see. But I think that's something that all general managers today are doing less and less and have been, because there are so many different areas that you have to cover and you have to be around. Remember, the team that you have in your city that you're dealing with, the team that you are responsible for, is the most important thing. And you should be around it as most you can to see and exactly know what's going on in every way. So there's a balance, but in the early years, there were less teams, there were less players. Now there are so many players all over the world. You can only be in so many places at one time. And the other thing you have to be careful of, certainly with the amateur situation, is that when you do see a player, you see it once or twice when your scouts are seeing it a number of times. So you have to rely on, not that one sort of stop observation. And as far as the NHL, you know the players. You know the players you're playing against. And, it's not to be redundant. It's changed. And I think if you looked at all NHL teams today and general managers, the job description is a lot different than it was in the earlier years. In fact, it's a 12-month process right now because of all the camps that they're at and just the way the rules are.
I got a question. I'm kind of out of left field here, John, before I let you slide back in here. So can you recall a situation where you were in discussion with another general manager about a trade for a player? Was there ever a time where you might have been inclined to go and look at that player face to face, but did not want to tip your hand in any way, shape, or form, so therefore didn't go see that guy? I mean, do those kinds of games play?
Absolutely. Those things happen. But you find a way to see the team. I can remember over the years, someone buying a ticket for me, just going in and sitting in the stands, and no one even know that you were at the game, because all of us know what scouts of each team are at each game, knowing who's looking at.
Sure.
Now, every team is scouted, but it's less than the way it was before. But you do get in to see players if you have the opportunity to. We were very fortunate here in this market because you could go across the street and see a game at the Rangers, or you could go see a game at the Island, and you could drive to Philly when I was in New Jersey. So just as a hockey fan, you went. So no one really knew whether you were looking at a player or not. So
yeah.
I think all of those things transpired, but you don't hide it anymore. It's tough to hide right now. The media has a way of getting information from different teams that I've never seen before, which, as John knows, is just out of my vocabulary. I've always said the unknown source is the most valuable player every day, and I just despise that. I wish that if someone has something to say, or it's an observation, or it's just a survey, put your name to it.
Yeah. Here, here.
How much video scouting do you do now, Lou? And has the pandemic forced you to do more?
Absolutely. It's constant, John. Even your scouting staff now, when a schedule comes in, you have a live schedule that they can make in their division, and then you have a television schedule that they're on. So it has changed. And also the volume of games that you can get from all over the world with the technology right. You have. There isn't a game that you cannot see in any league throughout the world. It's totally different.
Were you an advocate of moving the draft?
Yes, I was. But I do understand the reasons that we have not.
Why did you want the draft moved?
Well, I just thought it was difficult with the scouting process for all the teams to really make an evaluation the way you'd like to have it. But everybody's on an equal footing. So it's still the same. But I think that the league looked into it, but for various reasons, it certainly didn't work out. But we have it the way it is, and we'll go forward.
Your team has had, just to go back to the Islanders for a bit, your team has had success against the Boston Bruins, who we all acknowledge are a very good hockey team. You kind of owned them. How do you explain that?
Well, I don't know if we owned them. Each and every game was a difficult game, except for one game, could have gone either way. Like the game we played last night could have gone either way. I don't have any answer to that. We do play a similar style as far as the way we play. We still have more games against them. We also played them at home. We'll have our hands full when we play them again. But right now, all I'm focused on, or we're focused on, is playing Philadelphia on Thursday night. And that's the only way you can approach this season. But sometimes these things occur where, you have better fortunes against one than the other. That changes quickly. You can't rest on anything that you've done in the past.
No, I get that, but you're right. It does happen all the time in sports, that in a certain cycle, and it could be over a number of years, it could be just in 1 year, there's almost inevitably teams have success against another team consistently over the course of that year. And I think we all as fans, and you in the business, look at that and try and analyze, why is that? Is it something about the style that your team plays versus the style that their team plays that gives you a particular advantage? Is there an additional level of motivation within the room before a game? Like, why does this happen? And maybe there is no answer to this, Lou. Maybe it's just circumstance.
Well, I'll say this, and I know I'm going to get a chuckle out of John right now. Bob, if we had the answer to those questions, we could make our plan.
All right, let's figure that. You and I, let's get together and figure it out.
Okay. So all those years you were on the other side of the Hudson, and all those years that you were here with us in Toronto, what do you now know about Islander fans that you didn't know before?
There is passion in the group that I've ever been around, and it was unique for me to see that, because as you said, I was very close being in New Jersey. And I think an indication of that is that here we have fans just coming into the buildings over the last week or so. And we played in New Jersey the other night, and the number of Islander fans that were at the New Jersey game sort of maybe surprised me. But when I really thought about it and went back to history, I didn't pay attention to it, but they were there in the Jersey games even before they had their section. They love the sport. They're passionate. And all you have to do is attend the game in the Coliseum and it'll answer the question for you. Just And what I like the most about the new facility we're going to have is that it's built for hockey, and it's a modern facility that will have the atmosphere of an old building. And I think that's what's transpired, that's changed, that some of these new buildings that were built lost the flavor that their original building had. And I thought that it was just fantastic. And it was pre-me that all of this was done, that they paid a special focus on trying to get that Coliseum atmosphere in a modern building.
And the new building's on time? You'll be there in October?
It's on time, whether we play October 1st or October 30th, but we will be in the building for next season.
I have one more question. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but and Bob mentioned Connor McDavid before.
And why are you on the spot?
Because I like to put you on the spot, though. I like to. When Connor McDavid was 14 years old, there was another player in this market that people said that he was better than Connor. And this guy was going to be an empty net superstar in the National Hockey League. You have, and I say that as an aside, knowing full well that you have done a great job in managing some of the players and helping some players in your career. You don't like to talk about this, but what you did for guys like Kenny Danico, what you did for guys like Scott Gomez, what you did for Nazem Kadri. But why hasn't Josh Hosang become a better player? Because he has the talent.
I wish I had the answer to that. He has worked at it as best he possibly can. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked out. And we've worked with him to help him in that. In fact, even what we've tried to do most recently by getting him to get his game back, by going to Europe and, you know, playing in the Swedish Elite League. But I don't have any answers to that because God gave him tremendous talent. And maybe someday, and maybe it'll take another organization for them to get that out of him. But he's a good young man. And I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, I'm not trying to put you on the spot now. I just, from the time he was in junior hockey, you could just see this, the talent just exude on the ice. And he's built for the modern game. He's built for this game. I mean, he could be like Matt Barzal if he wanted to be. That's the frustration I have in knowing how good he was 10 years ago.
Well, we put him on waivers, John, to give him another opportunity, another organization.
Yeah.
Which he wasn't picked up. But I don't have the answer to why the God-given talent hasn't materialized to the degree that everybody would have liked to have seen it. Certainly the Islanders took him in the first round, prior to me, so they had to feel very high on him. But remember, if you give a player every opportunity to have success, it's on them.
Well, it is on them. And I mean, it speaks to what I was about to say. And that is, we're not all motivated in the same way. And I don't know the player at all in terms of his personality or desire, but it would seem to me that if the talent level is at the level of that he has, what is the other missing ingredient? At some point, it's got to be the internal engine, the willingness to sacrifice, the willingness to practice and to work on your craft and to not let it go to your head. And I guess most guys that make it to the National Hockey League have that engine. Maybe he just got through junior hockey with talent alone and has never had that motivation. I don't know. I'm kind of looking to you guys for a response. John, what do you think happened to him?
I think it's one of those mysteries that, 10 years from now, there'll be a book, Whatever Happened to Josh Hosang, which is really in so many ways, very sad. Because people that have that talent, and to lose credit, as I said before, he has done an amazing job, Lou, you have in your career, of finding ways to get through to lots of players like this. And you have become a favorite of all these guys because you have created loyalty and an opportunity. And that's all a player can ask.
Hear, hear. Mr. Lamorello, it is always our pleasure to have you on the program. You are always kind and generous with your time. We appreciate it. We wish you continued success with the Islanders. And not too many games away from a playoff appearance, we presume. I don't think there's much doubt about that. And who knows? Maybe a ring for the Islanders once again. Thank you, Lou.
Always a pleasure. And, John, as you know, Bob, we go way back, almost too far back to remember and think. And also, Bob, I appreciate the years that I did spend in Toronto and getting to know you and the way you treated me. And I appreciate that and respect that.
Oh, it was easy for me, Lou, and being so much younger than you two guys, you know, I appreciate the.
Please.
Oh.
You really wanted to ruin a nice conversation. Huh?
From the New York Islanders, our friend Lou Lamorello. We'll come back with more after this. With John Shannon, Bob McCowan. The Raptors have played 5 games, John, or more games. Without 3/5 of their starting rotation.
I think it's 5 now, Bob.
It's 5 for sure because they've lost 5 in a row. Now, they are all technically eligible to come back. Van Vliet, Anunoby, Siakam, the 3 starters that have been missing. We did find out, and I really don't understand the philosophy behind this, Van Vliet acknowledged that he had COVID and he went through a couple of rough days. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, this league does not like to tell people that the guy's out with COVID.
Well, I think most leagues are like that, Bob. I think there's a privacy issue that has to be respected. You know, it's not fair, but there's a privacy issue that has to be respected.
I don't think it has to be respected. I think you live in an environment where you divulge all kinds of pieces of information. And what is determined to be personal and what is determined to be public information is,
frankly, no basis. I think it's an agreement between the players' union and the leagues. And it's not just the NBA, it's the NHL too.
Well, are you going to say the same thing for injuries? You know, the reason they don't announce injuries in sports, generally speaking, is because they think it gives some kind of competitive advantage to the opposition.
But you know that's going to change when gambling becomes much more important.
It's not really going to change, John, that much. Don't be so sure. The National Football League is the blueprint for what Las Vegas does and what the gambling world does. And to this day, players are still listed as probable, improbable, out, this, that, the other thing. And the nature of the injury still is not fully disclosed. So the veil of secrecy continues to exist. Don't be so sure that gambling is going to change anything for the NHL or MLB or anybody else. Anyway, the question that I have, and I raised this, I believe, the other day on the program, and I didn't get a satisfactory answer to it. Not that I'm expecting to get one from you, but is there something inherently wrong with an NBA team being forced to play regularly scheduled games that count in the standings for the period of 2 weeks, and it would have been more games if the All-Star break hadn't fallen in here.
That's right.
Without 3 of their 5 starting players. Does that speak to fairness, competitive balance, whatever? Because the part of this, you know, we've been going through COVID for a year now. This is the second season for every sport except the NFL, mm-hmm. that they've gone through this. And there are no rules. It's just every day we're going to make it up. This team's got too many players out. This, you know, is COVID spread, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we'll cancel those games. St. Louis Cardinals in baseball, Florida Marlins in baseball, several teams in the NBA and in the NHL, games postponed. Where's the bar? And why haven't they decided what that bar is?
I don't think they know what the bar is, because I don't think they know how COVID affects people. And I think that how COVID is transmitted amongst teammates.
I don't care how it's transmitted, John.
No, but you're asking for logic in an illogical situation, Bob. That's what you're asking for. It's an illogical world.
There's no question that Siakam, Ananobi, and Van Vliet were not going to play for five games. There was no doubt about that. The impact that of them spreading the disease to anybody else is non-existent. If they're in a hotel room by themselves, which they were,
right,
the risk of spread has now passed.
You hope?
Well, no, there's no hope unless they'd already given it to other players who hadn't been diagnosed as yet. I tell you what though,
the problem is that we're now focusing on one team. You know, this is an issue that's rampant throughout the NBA and the NHL every day.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have eight NBA level players, that's the league rule that you can play.
Yeah. Well,
they may not be your starters, but they're eight NBA level players.
Stupid. We thank Lou Lamoriello for joining us on the program. And
I think he's mad at me.
Or it can't be. I'm not the least bit surprised. I'm mad at you most of the time. For John Shannon, Bob McCown, we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.